Johnny got a toy golf set when he was three, and from that day on, he was hooked. All he wanted to do was golf, golf, golf. He'd be on the links before school, after school. All he ever wanted was to go pro. And then, one day, when he was holding his grandson and thinking about his 12 handicap, Johnny realized it just might not happen for him. But you know what did happen for him? He switched to Geico and saved a bunch of money on car insurance. So that was good, and so was hanging out with his grandson.
Geico presents yet another voicemail from your roommate.
Hi! So, about the kitchen. Turns out, when there's a grease fire, you're not supposed to throw water on it. Who would have known, right? Anyways, the fire department is here, and it's totally cool. Give me a call back when you get a chance.
The Geico Insurance Agency could help keep your personal property protected, like if danger is your roommate's middle name. Visit geico.com to see how easy it is to switch and save on renter's insurance.
Hello, everybody, and welcome again to Nerd to the Third Power, your one-stop shop for all things nerdy and awesome. I'm your host and master of ceremonies, Dr. Gonzo. With me, as always, in this epic quest of awesomeness is our resident anime goddess, the Cat. Cat, how are you doing?
I'm doing all right. I think I'm doing a little bit better than you. You look rough.
Oh, man, I've got one foot in the grave and the other on a banana peel. I'm running literally on 1 hour of sleep. As we record this, I've been awake for a grand total of, 20 minutes. So I don't know if I've ever mentioned this on the show, but I work we record on a Tuesday and I work weekend night. So Monday night through to Tuesday morning, I had to work. I didn't get off until 8 a.m. And then normally I come home and I go right to bed and I wake up just before we record. But because E3 is in full swing and I'm a fucking crazed moron, I stayed up to watch the Nintendo Direct. So that just threw my whole sleep schedule off. So I've got maybe 6 cups of coffee coursing through my veins right now. So if you hear a wet explosion, that's my heart forcing its way out of my chest in protest for, the caffeine overdose. But yes, E3 is in full swing, and I'm going to stop right there, because if I start talking about those things that I am excited about, I'd take up the whole hour, and the E3 show is next week. One funny story that I do have to tell about the Nintendo Direct today is the last thing that they announced over the course of the Direct was a sequel to Breath of the Wild is in development, and I don't know if it's because it was so sleep deprived, if I was just that excited. But I wound up doing a Superman and literally tearing my shirt in half off of my chest. I'm not kidding. If you're watching the YouTube feed, I've got a photo of the T-shirt I was wearing, and I'm just like, if there's a sign that I'm way too invested in something, that's it right there. I need to just take a vacation and just unplug for a few days and just have an electronics cleanse.
If that makes any sense.
Yeah, I need to detox, man. Massage and sauna and steam, that kind of all that relaxing bullshit. So, but like I said, the E3 show is next week, and that's going to be a lot of fun. And but for this week, we are discussing the Netflix Carmen Sandiego series and kind of, our history with the franchise in general, which that's going to be a lot of fun. But of course, there is procedure to follow. And so we are going to begin, as always, with Ask a Geek. And let me just take all these questions about E3 and just put them over here, because they'll probably be answered next week over the course of our blowout. So as for questions that aren't about E3, I got one here for you, Kat. And this one comes from Shelley. And she asked that since you enjoyed the Good Omens series so much, are there any other book series that you think would make good miniseries?
I mean, let's see. Actually, yes. What are they called? I'm hardcore blanking. I'm running on more sleep than Gonzo, but not by much. The old What are they called? It's the books by Garth Nix. Sabriel, Lyriel, Abhorsen, that series. I cannot remember what they're called together because they have individual book names, but there is like a grouping name.
Old Kingdom?
Yes, the Old Kingdom. I was like the Old Dominion, and then my brain was just going, Old Dominion, Tank Police. No, God, no. Yeah, that's the one. Those are really, really interesting books that, like, I really want to play a D&D character that's Sabriel, because just the whole concept of, like, reverse necromancy, to me, is just really interesting. But
I'm sorry, isn't that just killing someone?
It's kind of. It's like, I've never heard of it. It's about a girl whose father was some sort of like sorcerer kind of, but he's called the Abhorsen. And they have like these special bells that they wear on a bandolier across their chest. And the bells allow them to like put the dead to rest or enter into the realm of death in order to put the dead to rest. It's really interesting. So I love the magic of this world. There's very old magic. Not many people can do magic, and nobody can do magic that she does. It's like a very unique thing. Like magic is the way magic works. And then the way that there are basically, at least in Sabriel, there's kind of like two worlds. There's something that's more akin to a modern world. And then the old world where everything's sort of wild and less of the, you know, technological advances and magic and all kinds of stuff. I just love the world that Garth Nix created. Even if I haven't finished all the books, I have them all. I just haven't finished them. Because they're not that easy to find unless you go online. And I wanted to, you know, like make sure I found decent copies in person. Anyway,
are they just out of print or?
Yeah, it's not like a new series. Like the most recent of the books is a few years old, and it only came out in hardback for whatever reason. So it's like, but I really enjoyed the first book, and I'm still reading through the others. But I think that would make a really, like, from an aesthetic point of view, would make a really interesting book series. And because the like, at least in Sabriel and Lyriel, like, the characters are a little bit younger, so you could make that appeal to a pretty wide range.
Hmm.
Make that shit happen, TV.
Okay, any others?
Like, anything by Terry Pratchett, I would heartily watch. In fact, like,
You would hardly watch?
Heartily.
Oh, heartily. Okay.
Sorry. I'm slurring my words today because I'm super tired. But like the you know how they have the Arrowverse, so they have the Arrow and they have Legends of Tomorrow and Flash and all of that.
Oh, you can make a whole channel out of Terry Pratchett's works, I think, because they all just kind of weave in and out of each other. You just want a Terry Pratchett channel.
Yeah, basically. I want the DC TVU. Specifically for Terry Pratchett, because the Terry Pratchett's books are my favorite. So I want like the Rincewind, and I want a whole TV show just for Rincewind, and then I want the guards, and I just want a whole thing for the guards, and then the witches, and just the thing for the witches, and then one for death, and it's all just death. Oh, that would be great.
Okay. All right. Let's see here. Next question here comes from Paul, and it's for me. And he asks, Which method of game collecting do I prefer? Collecting to play or collecting for money? And I personally collect games that I want to play at some point, which is it is its own level of disheartening when you look at it when your backlog of games to play is upwards of like 400. It's a little intimidating. But I mean, you know, there are people who they collect games just as an investment. I wouldn't exactly call it the most secure investment because prices, you know, go up and down, you know, like anything. And you know, also one of the things that you have to keep in mind is that, you know, just because something is worth something, that doesn't necessarily mean you're going to find somebody who's going to be willing to pay that. But me personally, I mean, I collect games that I want to play. The only time that I'll buy something that I know I'll collect something for its monetary value is if it's something that
I know is going to be really hard to find, and I know that I'm going to want. Like fucking Nintendo, they fucking got me twice with Pokemon Sword and Shield, because I pre-ordered both of the games individually, and then they had the Pokemon Direct either last week or the week before, and they announced that they're coming out with a 2-pack of both games together, and I was like, fuck, I gotta get that, because you know that that's gonna be hard as shit to find later on down the line. So I'm gonna have, basically, at the end of the day, I'm gonna have 2 copies of each Pokemon game, because I got them individually, and I got this fucking 2-pack. So, yeah. And then he's got a secondary question here, which is, in addition to my game collecting, do I collect any ancillary stuff for gaming? And I've actually kind of developed a minor addiction to video game art books. I've got maybe about a dozen of them in the last couple months or so. And I really enjoy looking at the concept art and how characters and concepts are developed. So far, if I had to pick a favorite art book, it would be a coin toss between the Xenoblade Chronicles 2 complete works book that I had to import from Japan, or the first volume of the Nier Automata concept art series. I have to go pull it off the shelf and look at what it's actually called properly. But yeah, I started getting real into video game art books. So, which is another fucking drain on my wallet, because, you know, those tend, so you know, expensive. Yeah. Kat knows what I'm talking about, because anime art books are the same fucking way.
Oh, they're so bad. I got lucky in that when I started collecting anime art books, I was living in Japan at the time. So I would go to the used bookstore, Book Off. If you've ever been to Book Off, it is like fucking paradise, because everything is really like extremely high quality, and then it's like $2 or $3. So I was getting art books for like less than $5 that retail for like 30 or more. And then when you get them in America, they're like $80. I'm like, fuck.
I think the one that made me do a double take, I can't remember what it was. I think it was the Persona book that I ordered. I wound up paying more in postage than I did for the book itself.
Yeah, I believe that.
Yeah. So that was kind of sobering. Okay, let's see. Here's a question here for me, and this one comes from Eric, and he asked why I don't like anime, and I don't remember ever saying I didn't like anime. It's not that I don't like anime. I watch very little of it. Now, Kat will tell you, back when we were in college together, I was real big into it, because everyone else was, and I wanted to fit in and be popular, because I have no self-esteem whatsoever. It's got to have a unique kind of hook for me to get into anime. Like, the last series that I got really big into, I think I mentioned Pop Team Epic, I got into because I thought it was just hilarious. And then I started watching Goblin Slayer because it reminded me a lot of the Marvel Max Punisher series by Garth Ennis from the early 2000s. It had that same kind of tone, which I really like, that kind of really hardcore action series. And then I tried to get into One Punch Man, but I couldn't get into it. I thought it was just because I just thought it was boring. But then I saw this analysis by a YouTube group called Wisecrack. They did an episode about, the philosophy of One Punch Man. And they talked about how in their analysis, the show was basically a subversion of the conflict based plot. And I'm just like, okay, so it could just be, I find it boring, or it could be, it's just too smart for me, which could be a possibility. It's not that I don't like anime. It's got to have a unique hook to catch me. So, Kat, I guess I'll ask you, is there anything out right now that you think I'd get a kick out of that I should check out?
Man, gosh. Okay. So one of the shows that I really like, and it's getting a second season, because everybody watches One Punch Man. I'm with you there. Like, everybody loved it. It didn't like ensnare me the way other people did. But one of its, like, I would call it like a sister show, because I think it was made by the same studio, by the same creators, is Mob Psycho 100. That is a show that I just ate up. Like, I binged it. It was pretty short. I binged it. And then I was like, okay, there's a live action movie. When do I get that? When can we watch this? When can we watch the second season? Like that did way more for me than One Punch Man. And there's no real reason why. Like they're kind of similar shows, even though they have no plot in common, but there's elements to them that are very similar. But for whatever reason, Mob Psycho did way more for me. And you might like that one. I'm not sure. But it is the story of like this kid named Mobu, and he has these psychic powers that he just doesn't have really very much control of. And he meets this a guy who is sort of a more or less a con artist who is tells people that they have ghosts and stuff living in their house so that he can try and exorcise them, even though there was really nothing there. So this gentleman meets Mob and realizes that Mob is the real deal, and then uses Mob to go exorcise places and get rid of spirits, and then like shit just gets so real. And it's this wonderful cast of characters of, you know, Mob is just this kind of clueless teenager who doesn't really have any friends and can't really control these abilities of his, but he is insanely powerful. And the more stress he builds up, and there's like a scale. So when he reaches 100 on the scale, he just absolutely erupts in power and could like annihilate a city block. And so it's really interesting watching him slowly losing it while just being this really nice, unassuming kid. And then all of the other characters who realize that Mob is so special and are flocking to him, either to use him or to learn from him or whatever, while he's just completely clueless. It's really an entertaining show.
All right, well, maybe I'll look it up. Now, I'll tell you something that will turn me off of an anime real quick, but without giving it a shot. Tell me that I have to catch up on like years and years worth of material. No. So it's like, oh, Gonzo, you'd really enjoy One Piece. I was like, oh, you mean that series has been running continuously for about 10 years? Yeah, no, thank you. I don't have that kind of time.
I mean,
You'd like Detective Conan.
Academia you could catch up in, but that would still be a little bit of a haul.
The one that really made me laugh was the guy was like, oh, you'd enjoy Detective Conan. Oh, fuck off. I know how long that's been going.
No, I don't want to enjoy Detective Conan. Ugh. Oh, man, that's a franchise. That's not like a show. That's a franchise.
That's a lifestyle.
It really is, though.
Okay. And let's see here now. That's about all the questions I can find right now that aren't about E3. So like I said, I'll just throw that on the pile, and we'll probably answer a whole bunch of those next week in our E3 blowout, which is going to be a lot of fun. So I guess that's all the time. That's all the Ask Geek questions that we have for this week. Thank you, as always, for sending them in. As always, you can send them to us to the email at drgonzo@nerdtothethirdpower.com. We love getting your questions, love reading them on the air, so go ahead and get those questions in. And so with that, we are going to jump right into the meat of this episode, and that is the Netflix Carmen Sandiego series. And this is something that I know Kat was really looking forward to when it was announced, and it's one that I've been kind of following, you know, with one eye on it. And I finally got a chance to shotgun it this weekend, and I thought it'd be fun. I know it's been out for a while, but I thought it'd be fun to kind of talk about the series and also kind of take a broader look at the Carmen Sandiego franchise in general, because me and Kat both have a history with Carmen Sandiego from different sides. So I guess, you know, we'll kind of start with giving kind of, you know, for those who don't know what we're talking about, all six of you, you know, who don't know what we're talking about. Carmen Sandiego began as a series of edutainment games published by Broderbund in the late 80s and the early 90s. And the focus was on teaching geography, and the central character was a sort of criminal mastermind character named Carmen Sandiego, who, instead of stealing, say, jewels or money or, you know, valuable trinkets, would steal national monuments, including ones that are physically impossible to steal. For example, I remember distinctly that at one point she stole the Grand Canyon. And since the Grand Canyon is just a giant hole in the ground, I'll leave it to you to figure out how that works. But she's also had television shows, a bunch of them, actually. And she's been kind of all over the place, and it's kind of an interesting franchise to follow because it's one of those franchises that was everywhere in the 90s, and then it kind of vanished for a few years. So, Kat, how did you come in contact with Carmen Sandiego?
I don't remember how I was like initially introduced to Carmen Sandiego. I think when I was young, and because you know we're old, you know, we can say that because Skyblaze isn't here. But you know, when computers were first coming around, there was like the built-in games like Ski and Solitaire, and that was it.
Ski Free,
Minesweeper, and Solitaire.
I'm just having flashbacks to the Yeti from Ski Free.
The Yeti, it always got you. You couldn't escape it. But anyway, so
more certain than death.
When and taxes, when you know we were growing up, all the computer games were educational, at least all the ones that my family would let us have. And we were not like a gaming family because we didn't get any, like, we didn't get a Sega, we didn't get a Nintendo, we didn't get any of those things because we didn't have money. So we got a couple of educational games on CD-ROM. And so we had, let's see, I think we had Where in the World is Carmen Sandiego? We had Where in Time is Carmen Sandiego? We had Where in the USA is Carmen Sandiego? And we had Where in Space is Carmen Sandiego? And I loved them. I played them over and over and over again. And I don't know what happened to them. But I always just, I just adored these games. I don't want to say it got me through a geography class or anything, because I did end up taking a geography class at some point. But I think that's part of my interest in worldly events and travel and places and space and time and all of those things. I think stems from playing those games over and over and over, because it was sort of one of those things where you're having fun, but you are learning, but you know that you're learning. So you really genuinely feel like, oh, I learned so much. I'm so smart. Like, you genuinely come out of it with a little bit of like a good feeling of I'm so smart as a kid. And it was just, oh gosh, they were so much fun. How many of the games did you have?
I actually didn't own any of them. The ones that I played were on like the elementary school computers. I remember Where in the USA, and I remember Where in the World 94, because Carmen Sandiego was one of those entertainment franchises that updated itself every couple of years. So I remember the 1994 edition of Where in the World, where you had like the kind of panoramic view of whatever country you were in and the little cartoon characters walking around. And the only character who I remember distinctly besides Carmen herself, well, characters, because the 94 edition actually had Lynn Thigpen, who was the chief from the PBS game show, in the game as a, in kind of a full motion video sequences. But then there was also this kind of time traveler character in this blue jumpsuit with all this wacky technology called Ivan Idea. And all the characters were named like that. They all had these weird ass puns for names. But I remember I used to get in trouble. Where in the USA used to get me in trouble in school because I would, you know, we were supposed to be doing this typing game with this ghost called Spooky, and I absolutely fucking hated it. So whenever the teacher wasn't looking, I'd, you know, close out of that and you know, open up Where in the USA as Carmen Sandiego and play that instead. So my first introduction to Carmen Sandiego actually wasn't in the computer games. It was actually in the PBS game show, which I think, you know, is one of those things that every 90s kid has seen at some point. And it's like ringing Pavlov's bell when you start singing, "Where in the world is Carmen Sandiego?" Yeah, you know, it's like the Simpsons theme. You're born knowing it. You know, that three things that you come out of the womb knowing. Darth Vader is Luke's father. It will always hurt, no matter how much your parents say it won't. And the theme song to Where in the World is Carmen Sandiego. And that was such a high energy show, and it was like I said, it was one of those shows where you knew you were learning, but it was so much fun you just didn't care. And one of the things that I remember that now that I go back and I look at it now is the grand prize of every show was you got to travel anywhere in the world. You know, you got to travel anywhere in the USA that you wanted. They would give you an all expenses paid trip to wherever in the US you wanted to go. And I remember looking at it thinking, you know, it would be real easy to just abuse that and just say, I want to go to Disney World. But it was, no, the kids were like, you know, I want to go to Chicago, or I want to go to Seattle, or I want to go to New York or something like that. And then it got a spinoff a couple years later, Where in Time is Carmen Sandiego, which I have vague memories of that. And then the one that I really enjoyed was actually the 90s cartoon series on Fox Kids, which I absolutely love that. And that's a cartoon that still really holds up today visually. I love the animation in that series. I also had this headcanon that the chief, who was this holographic in the cartoon, he was this computer program character, this hologram of like this blonde scientist with like you know, glasses and like this pompadour hair. And I had this headcanon that was actually Egon from the real Ghostbusters, who'd suffered some kind of accident. His brain was uploaded into a computer because it looked just like Egon from the real Ghostbusters. Like, go ahead, look it up. And tell me that there's not a resemblance, that they're not like twin brothers or something. And then from there, Carmen Sandiego just kind of disappeared for a while. I don't think I saw anybody talking about it until I actually met you, Kat, and you mentioned that you did a Carmen Sandiego cosplay.
I did. You know, it was something that it was just the right amount of nostalgia, you know, like maybe. Oh God, how long did I do that costume? It was like 6 or 7 years ago I started doing that costume. Maybe more. It may be more. But I was thinking, like, I want to do a costume that, you know, is really nostalgic, that everyone will know, but no one will think of doing.
And let's be honest, it's also really easy.
Well, you know what? Finding that jacket was not easy. Because I didn't make any of it. I found it all and it pieced it together. So it was a little bit of a haul to try and find a you know, a red trench coat. And I didn't do like one particular costume. It was sort of like let me get the hat and the coat. And there's a version of her that has boots. So I'm picking that one because I don't want the dress. Like, I don't want to wear a dress. I just want to be really comfortable. So it was sort of like my version of the costume was just a mishmash of other things. But that was the costume I did for like the next 4 or 5 years, just because it was really fun to wear. People more or less recognized you and got really excited because it hits just the right like nostalgia center in your brain. Where, you know, again, like most people wouldn't think to do it. Well, I mean, now everyone to do it, but you know, like 7 years ago, nobody was doing Carmen Sandiego. And then I think it kind of came around a little bit because of the like Waldo costumes got really popular. And it's a really popular pairing to do. I have both a Wenda and a Carmen Sandiego costume, so I've got them both.
Okay, I don't think I've ever seen the Wenda.
I have pretty much only done it for like Halloween or Comic-Con.
Ah, okay, all right.
And I don't usually like throw myself out there and do photo shoots because I don't like pictures of myself. I just like wearing costumes.
Okay.
But yeah, that Carmen costume, my friends and I did a photo shoot because my friend wanted to write a book about cosplayers in St. Louis and ended up like making it to a blog instead. But so my friend did a photo. We did a photo shoot at the Art Museum here in St. Louis. And we actually, like, we went inside, we told security that we wanted to pretend like we were going to steal some art. We would never touch anything or get close enough to anything to set off an alarm. And they could, like, tell us no if they wanted. And they were like, no, that's hilarious. And they radioed it to everybody in the museum who had a walkie-talkie. So all the security and staff. And they were like, yeah, there's a group of people walking around. They're going to take pictures pretending like they're stealing stuff. They're fine. So we went around and people were like, oh, you're the ones who are taking the pictures. That's great. And they were taking pictures of us taking pictures.
Pictureception.
Oh, got it. But it was so much fun. That's like the only time I've done like a photo shoot.
Nice.
And it was really fun, and it really like cemented, like, what's my favorite costume? It's this one, because this is the one that I've done. And gosh, so like having that love of Carmen, and the, you know, it to me, it's really interesting that we do have such a love for Carmen Sandiego, because it's a whole franchise based around she's the villain, but she's not like a bad person. She's just this really cool thief that you kind of admire as you play, because she's out there stealing the Grand Canyon and the Statue of Liberty and planets and stuff.
It's that sense of style that she always has, like, especially in the 90s cartoon, where she's practically like a female James Bond. She has all these like really cool nifty gadgets.
Yeah, she's got a whole organization of bad guys that she runs, but she looks cool. She's stealing stuff that you can't even steal, like,
again, the Grand Canyon. Giant hole in the ground.
She's the villain, but you absolutely come out of it going, she's so cool. And that's why, like, they're, you know, the smattering of Carmen Sandiego cosplayers that there have been. I mean, there's plenty now, of course, because nostalgia is a big thing, but like, for our generation growing up, and she's the only like truly recognizable character out of it. So I think that's part of why we latched onto her, other than just the rule of cool. She's really cool.
Yeah. And so I guess that brings us to the current Netflix Carmen Sandiego series, which is 10 episodes long. It's currently on Netflix. And it actually kind of twists around the mythos a little bit. In that it actually makes Carmen the central protagonist that we follow episode to episode. So, Kat, why don't you go ahead and just give us a brief tell us. Well, let's not put the cart before the horse. First of all, let's talk about our general thoughts on this series. So, Kat, what are your general thoughts on the new Carmen Sandiego series?
I was a little worried when it first came out, because it looked like, from the style. First off, everybody bitched about the style before the show came.
Geico presents yet another voicemail from your roommate.
Hi! So, about the kitchen. Turns out, when there's a grease fire, you're not supposed to throw water on it. Who would have known, right? Anyways, the fire department is here, and it's totally cool. Give me a call back when you get a chance.
The Geico Insurance Agency could help keep your personal property protected, like if danger is your roommate's middle name. Visit geico.com to see how easy it is to switch and save on renter's insurance. Geico presents, yikes, another voicemail from your roommate.
Sup, roomie? Hey, a pipe burst in the basement. It's completely flooded. Anyway, I called for someone to fix it, but in the meantime, I was thinking we could finally have that indoor pool party we've always wanted. I got some cool swan floaty things already going. Could you pick up some chips on your way home? Later.
The Geico Insurance Agency could help keep your personal property protected, like if your roommate isn't the brightest pool float in the flooded basement. Visit geico.com to see how easy it is to switch and save on renter's insurance.
Because everybody bitches about every new franchise that gets made into a style that isn't a complete copy of the original. Everybody gets freaked out when something changes. It's like the Thundercats, whatever the new show is. Everybody hated it even before it came out because they didn't like the style. Everybody bitches about modern cartoons having a certain style. Everything's become Steven Universe, I guess. And so, of course, I was like, oh, I don't know how I feel about the style. The style makes the characters look pretty young. I don't know how I feel about a young Carmen Sandiego. And having Carmen Sandiego be the good guy, I was kind of on board with, because I figured it wouldn't really be like, you know, she'd be the good guy, but it would really be like, we're just seeing things from her point of view rather than somebody else's point of view. And that's why she's the good guy. So it was all just like, wow, I hope they don't screw this up, because this is, you know, this could potentially be a really great show for young people to learn from, like we learned from, while at the same time could be really entertaining. So I wanted it to go really well, but I didn't have soaring hopes. But I was very pleasantly surprised, besides a few iffy accents in there by some of the voice cast. Otherwise, I really actually quite enjoyed it. It was like, there was occasions where I was like, don't end the episode there. Give me the next thing.
Yeah. As far as the art style, I mean, we'll get more into detail about it when we talk about the presentation. But yeah, this is one of those cases where it was kind of like with She-Ra. The still shots didn't do the show any favors because you really had to see things in motion to really get an appreciation for how the style works. But I like I said, I kind of like you. I was kind of iffy on the concept of Carmen being, you know, an out and out good guy. But it was executed really well. And one of the things I really enjoyed was if you knew what you were looking for, you could see all of these neat little hints and homages to past iterations of the character. Like I had a moment that made me laugh where I think it was the second Origins episode, where Carmen and the vile bookkeeper in the elevator. And the elevator music is, it's actually the music that was used as the theme for the 90s cartoon series, which, interesting piece of trivia, is actually a real piece of music from an opera. Can you guess which one?
Carmen.
Yep. No. So the joke with the 90s show is that Carmen actually stole the music from that opera to use as her theme song.
That's a great concept.
So why don't we start breaking the show down to its component parts? So, Kat, why don't you give us a plot summary of the first season of Carmen Sandiego?
Okay, now it has been a hot minute since this came out, so hopefully I remember the correct order of events. So the basic plot is that there is an organization called Vile that are sort of like the Vile Academy is like this fun, cool school where people learn how to be like debonair thieves and stuff, right? Sounds mm-hmm. pretty cool. And Carmen Sandiego is like a young woman in this case. She's like school aged. And she was adopted by the Vile Academy. She was found and brought to Vile Academy as a baby. So she was basically raised in this environment. And they have to pass a test in order to basically graduate and become like a real Vile member. And she fails her test and she's really upset. And she thinks that the sensei who was running the test was cheating. And she just really dedicates herself to proving that she was right and he was wrong. And in the process of trying to prove herself, she finds out that the Vile Academy is not what she thought it was at all. She thought it was like, you know, like fun thieves who go around doing cool stuff. But it turns out to be they're really genuinely bad, selfish, awful people who are running it. And she has this sort of crisis where she wanted to prove herself to these people, but it turns out they're really awful. And so she decides she's going to work against them. And so she dedicates her life to stealing the things that Vile is stealing. And so she's basically this sort of Robin Hood character who is stealing from thieves. And you kind of like see the friends that she's met along the way, including the player who kind of represents the player of the game that you would have been the player. And the player is like this, like a hacker
mm-hmm.
who helps her out. And then she's got a brother and sister pair who of like ridiculously accent Bostonians who hang out with her and serve like as a getaway driver and stuff like that. and then you have like a cast of the Acme. Who that's what you play as in the game. You play as an Acme agent. And there's agents in there who I believe are from the games, if I recall correctly. I think they're yeah. either hinted at in some other version of either the game show or the games or something.
Yeah. Pretty much all the characters are a nod to something in Carmen Sandiego's past. So the character from the game that you're thinking of, well, the characters are Chase Devineaux and Julia Argent, who were both named characters from various versions of Where in the World is Carmen Sandiego.
Okay.
And then the brother-sister pair, Zach and Ivy, they're actually new iterations of the main characters from the 90s cartoon.
Oh, Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah, and then going back to the player, I really liked how they pulled him off, because one of the things that I always thought was really awkward about the 90s cartoon series was it played itself off like it was actually, you know, taking place inside the game. So they would address the player, quote unquote, and the player was actually supposed to be the viewer. And they would have occasionally these shots of this live action kid, you know, in this dark room, you know, playing a computer game. And I always thought that was really awkward. So when I found out that there was going to be a player in this series, I was like, okay, this is going to be kind of weird. But the idea that they made him a white hat hacker, which is a real thing, and made him an actual named character and player was just his handle, I thought was a really clever way to do that. And then I also want to give a shout out to the character of the chief, who looks just like an aged up version of Lynn Thigpen's chief from the game show. I got the sense that they were kind of doing a send up to her. May she rest in peace, because she passed away several years ago. But I really felt like the Acme chief was a send up of Lynn Thigpen, and I thought that was really neat to do.
Yeah, and actually, the Wikipedia says she is.
Oh, is she?
That's what Wikipedia says. because I'm trying to remember everything, so I have Wikipedia pulled up. But anyway, so there's the Acme agents, and they're running around trying to find Carmen Sandiego because they don't know that Vile exists. They only know that Carmen exists. So they're finding these very odd, they're like, oh, this thing got stolen, and here's the only evidence we have is Carmen Sandiego. And then, you know... Detective Julia Argent always finds out, like, hey, I don't think Carmen stole this. I think Carmen put it back. And then the detective Devineau is always like, no, she is my rival. I have to find her.
Can I say, am I the only one who got Zenigata and Lupin vibes from
yes.
Devineau?
Yes, he even looks like he belongs in Lupin. He totally belongs in Lupin. and so it's Carmen trying to thwart Vile while getting chased by Acme. And so Vile is going around doing awful things all over the world. And it's not always stealing per se, but it always involves some kind of theft. Like they might be trying to do something terrible and they have to steal something in order to do it. But it's really cool that there's all these different teachers or, you know, higher ups in the Vile International League of Evil, because these are all people that Carmen knows. And so in the games, this would have been Carmen's cohorts, but instead these are all her basically her nemeses. But what's interesting is that she is fighting against them, but she still likes a lot of these people. She doesn't want to hurt them per se, because she has a lot of fond memories of them. Like, they basically raised her. And so it is it creates interesting character conflict for her, because she's really torn between, she wants to do the right thing, but also she doesn't want to, like, get anybody killed.
Yeah. And like I said, I'm getting tongue-tied here. Yeah, the way that they spun Carmen's story in this series, I thought was really creative. And like I said, it really handled well the worries that I had, which is like, okay, you're making a show about a thief, but you want to make her the hero. How are you going to play that? And I really like that they kind of set up this kind of right hand isn't talking to the left hand, isn't talking to the other left hand triangle between Vile and Acme and Carmen. And I really see some interesting character relationships developing between all these different sides. I like that that all the characters, especially some of the villains. We get the mustache twirling villains like the head of Vile and the Countess. You know, who are just kind of, you know, oh, I'm evil for the sake of evil. But then you have characters like the coach and Shadow-san, the stealth trainer. Who, you know, yeah, they're evil people, or in Shadow's case, maybe if not outright evil, maybe just not the greatest person in the world. But they have some human dimensions to them. Like,
you know, it's pretty clear in the last couple episodes of the first season that, you know, the coach actually really did care for Carmen, like, as a daughter. And, it you know, she's not exactly happy about having to eliminate her. But, you know, she still has to do her duty to Vile. And I also liked how the series didn't shy away from, you know, some of the implications behind, you know, what a school for essentially supervillains would be. Like, one of the characters we're introduced to in the first episode is Gray Graham, I think was his name, who becomes kind of the big brother figure to Carmen. And he winds up getting getting caught by Interpol. And when Vile pulls him out and brings him back to the island, they're like, you know, okay, we have to fucking lobotomize you now. We have to fucking mind wipe you. And I like that they didn't shy away from that. So there's so many neat touches with the story that I thought were really creative, and things that I hadn't expected them to do. The only thing that I found kind of awkward about how the show was paced was how they would randomly go into spiels about facts about whatever country they were in. So it's like, okay, you're going to this country here where the chief export is the durian, and they produce 70 million tons of rice a year. And like, okay, all right. I get that this is supposed to be an educational show, but I mean, there is something to be said about, you know, having it fit naturally into the narrative. So I guess that's our general thoughts on the plot of the series. So let's start talking about the cast. And I gotta say, the voice cast in this series is spot on. I absolutely loved almost everybody's performances. The only one that got on my nerves a bit was Inspector Davineau, and that's just because I thought his French accent was just really overblown.
It is really over the top. Some of the accents, like the Boston accents from the brother and sister, they're not that pleasant to listen to. And then Inspector Detective whatever Davineau with the French accent, not my favorite thing in the world. But like, they're fine. I'm just picky. That's all it is just me being picky. But Finn Wolfhard as the player was great. I probably would not have noticed that was Finn Wolfhard.
Man, the Stranger Things cast is really knocking it out lately. we had Eleven in Godzilla, and then we got Finn Wolfhard in Carmen Sandiego. I gotta say, because like I said, I have such nostalgia for the game show. I have to give a shout out to the Chief's voice actress, and she channels Lynn Thigpen just so well. I absolutely loved it. Another character that I thought was really neat was I have to pull up the Wikipedia because I had the actor's name off the top of my head and now I don't have it. The guy who played Gray Graham.
Oh yeah, what is her name? Michael Goldsmith.
Is that his name, Michael Goldsmith?
That's what Wikipedia says.
Yeah, I really liked like his character, and I liked his performance. And I like the dynamic between him and Gina Rodriguez, who voices Carmen, who she knocked it out of the park this series.
Yeah, I really enjoyed her, which you know, it was going to be like, you have to have a good and I've never seen anything that Gina Rodriguez is in. I was just looking on Wikipedia and I was like, I know your name and you're in everything, but I've never seen a single thing you're...
Yeah, and I had that moment where it's like, I'm listening to her talk as Carmen, and I'm like, I've heard that voice before somewhere, but then I go and look at her filmography and I'm like, I've never seen any of it. So it's like, I don't know if she's just got like one of those voices or something, or if maybe I might have seen her in something just really obscure that I don't even remember. I mean, the closest thing that comes to something that I would have seen is she was in three episodes of Elena of Avalor, looking at her filmography, which, you know, I mean, my niece is real big into that, but I mean, that's as close as I've ever gotten to seeing anything that she's done, if I'm looking at this right. I swear she's been in a video game somewhere, though. She had to have been, like, I've heard that voice somewhere. But no, her performance as Carmen was absolutely great, and I love the kind of spunk that she brings to the character.
Yeah, I think they really picked like the perfect person for Carmen. Oh gosh, I really, really love how they did Carmen.
All right. And then I guess that's our thoughts on the cast. So let's
wait. No, because before we leave the cast, I have to talk about two of the people from who are in Vile. Professor Maelstrom and Coach Brunt are well-known voice people, but also Critical Role people. So, like, I was just watching the show, and I could not unhear Liam O'Brien, who plays Professor Maelstrom, because he's, mm-hmm. like, the head bad guy. And I'm listening to it, and I'm like, I can't unhear Liam O'Brien from, you know, hundreds of episodes of Critical Role. Like, I just, woo. And he plays, like, other, like, little side characters, too. And I'm like, you know, before Critical Role, I never would have known his voice. But now I listen to it once a week for, like, 4 hours. I'm like, oh, yeah, there's Liam. There's Liam. And then Coach Brunt is played by Mary Elizabeth McGlynn, who, if you've never heard of her, she's also a tremendously amazing... she, I think, was one of the directors for the voice cast of She-Ra, I believe. But she's also in tons and tons of shows. She was like in Cowboy Bebop and stuff, but she's married to Steve Blum. So like she is like the power, like half of the power couple of the California anime voice actors. But like her as Coach Brunt, just, it killed me. I love her so much. She has this amazing big personality. And when she plays on Critical Role, and guests on there and stuff, she's always just like, she steals the spotlight. And so when I was listening to Coach Brunt, I was like, oh, I love you, Mary. I love you so much. Oh. Like, so if you like Critical Role, you might actually really enjoy this show, if for no other reason than Liam O'Brien and Mary Elizabeth McGlynn. Get in there and watch it. For other anime voice actors, like Troy Baker's in it, and Kari Wahlgren is one of the main like side characters. So, like, it's got a really, like, you know, besides the Hollywood actors like Finn Wolfhard and Gina Rodriguez, it actually has proper voice people, too.
Okay. All right, so I guess since we've talked about the cast, let's talk about the thing that kind of had us the most, you know, raised eyebrows about the series, and that's the presentation. And I've got to say, when I first saw the stills from this series, I was kind of like, okay, you know, it looks like a painting, which is great for a still shot, but how is that going to work in motion? And I got to say, it actually works really well. Every frame of this, like I said, every frame of this series, it looks like a painting, and it's absolutely gorgeous. There are some times where the animation gets a little jerky, particularly when it comes to like hair flow. But for the most part, it works really well, and I'm really impressed by how they did how they made the visuals of this show work.
Yeah, you know, because, again, we were all worried, what's it going to look like? Are we going to get, like, a carbon copy looking style of some other show? And everybody's worried about it because we're used to Carmen Sandiego being adult characters. And if you age them down or age down the, you know, like, make them look younger, it might be weird. And, like, I think at first... I was a little weird because a lot of the first, what, two episodes were primarily flashbacks. There was like a big origin story when she's a little bit younger. So like I think at first you're sort of, you're a little bit off put by like, what am I watching? What am I watching? but the style I think is actually really cute. I thought the simplicity, you know, it is nice, but it's also quite beautiful in a lot of scenes. Lots of like nice, vibrant colors. It's while still being maybe just a little bit soft at times. It's kind of hard to explain what the show looks like until you just watch it in motion. But go ahead.
Sorry. And it also allows for some really distinctive character designs. Like one of my favorite character appearances in this series is Dr. Sarah Bellum, the mad scientist, who she just looks like the type of character that just like is completely uninterested in normal human beings and just wants to, you know, make stuff to blow up. And I absolutely love her character design. And every character in this series, even minor ones like the Countess's assistant,
or some of the other vile thieves. They all have really distinct character designs. You can tell instantly who they are just at a glance. What character you're looking at, which is a problem that I've had with some. With some recent cartoons, is character designs that are just, I didn't feel were really distinct or were just kind of too samey. But everyone's got a very distinct look and feel about them in this series, and I think that's absolutely down to the painting style visuals that they've developed. I think that it's how can I put it? It's deceptively simple. Like, you look at it and it looks, at first glance, it looks like everything's just kind of flat and just kind of half finished. But then when you see it in motion, you realize that there's a lot more depth to it than you initially thought there was. And I think that this show has a great visual style, and I absolutely want to see more of it.
Yeah, genuinely. Like, I think we're supposed to get another season.
We damn well better after that sequel hook.
Yeah. So there's a lot of stuff that they left for another season that I really can't wait for. Yeah, please, soon, can we get a second season?
Yeah, and then another thing that I want to shout out, and again, I'm probably gonna get laughed at because this is one of those things that only I noticed, but the music in this series I thought was also really cool. It had a very kind of a retro James Bond kind of vibe to it that I thought was really neat. And to answer your question, yes, we are getting a second season. That was confirmed on February of this year, actually.
Okay, that's probably why, because I forgot, because it came out in January and we're talking about it. All these months later.
Yeah. But it's just this. There's so much to love about this show, and it's definitely one that people who've grown up with Carmen Sandiego should definitely check out. And I'm with you. I definitely want to see more of it. And I think we're supposed to get a live action Carmen Sandiego movie on Netflix as well, with Gina Rodriguez as the title character. So that'll be interesting, please, to see.
Because she was so well cast, like, they knew what they were doing. It was like, thank you for casting somebody, an actress who could play the live action and just do the voiceover. Like, it doesn't miss a beat, basically.
Yeah. We're kind of running close to the end of our clock here. So let's start wrapping things up with our final thoughts or things that stood out to us. So Kat, what were some moments in the series that really stood out to you, and what's your final general thoughts on the series?
Honestly, and this is like the big spoiler, but, Carmen's relationship with Shadow-san was the best. Like, between actually her relationship with Coach Brunt and with Shadow-san is just it's like hands down, besides the actual like crimes themselves and just like the whoosh 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 and mysteries and stuff. I love that Coach Brunt and her have like basically a mother-daughter relationship while being on opposite sides. But more importantly, again, spoilers, that Shadow-san is the one who brought her to Vile as a baby and deliberately failed her on her final test into Vile so that she wouldn't be a part of it. Because that is, it's such a big deal for Carmen throughout the whole show. And you keep wondering, like, you know, like, she failed this test because of Shadow-san and she's convinced that she should have passed. And, you know, she's so dedicated to proving herself, even after she's left Vile Academy, even after she's long passed, she still wants to prove that she was right, because she needs that validation from somebody who doesn't seem to respect her. And really, it was wrong the whole time. And it was such a wonderful plot twist to find out that he adored her and wanted to protect her, so deliberately failed her on the test, because he didn't want her following in his footsteps. And to me, that was just absolutely amazing. And if we get another season of it, I want to see so much more of that kind of thing.
The reveal of the relationship between her and Shadow-san, I would describe it as like Obi-Wan Kenobi from hell. Because that's pretty much what he was. And like I said, after that reveal at the end, yeah, we damn well better get a season two. Especially considering that he left her one of those hard drives that she'd stolen at the beginning of the game. So I wonder if he's actually like a double agent for Acme, or if that's the direction he's going to go. So I'm definitely interested to see what's going to happen next. But I mean, as far as this series itself, I mean, like I said, I absolutely enjoyed it. I was really surprised by it, and it's definitely something that's worth checking out. And it's a short watch. It's only, I think, like 10 episodes.
Yeah, you could get through it real quick.
Yeah, I mean, I just watched it last night over the course of my work shift. Nice. And I really enjoyed it. And this is like playing off of nostalgia is always such a risky game, because if you don't do it right, you can wind up just totally screwing the pooch and just completely destroying the franchise that you're trying to bring back into modern culture. But they knocked it out of the park with this series. It's got just the right balance of nostalgia and fan service for people who grew up with the Carmen Sandiego franchise, and new takes on the series that give it a fresh new look and a fresh new feel. And I absolutely loved it, and I can't wait to see more of it. And so with that, that's about all the time that we have for Nerd of the Third Power this week. Thank you, as always, for tuning in. We will see you guys next week for our E3 blowout, where I will finally be able to gush for just days about the conferences, mostly the Nintendo the Nintendo presentation, because holy shit, they're the only ones that have shown consistent gameplay footage this year. But that's a rant for another table. We will see you guys next week. Thank you, as always, for tuning in. I'm Dr. Gonzo.
I'm the cat.
We'll see you next week. Taka, play us out.
Johnny got a toy golf set when he was 3, and from that day on, he was hooked. All he wanted to do was golf, golf, golf. He'd be on the links before school, after school. All he ever wanted was to go pro. And then, one day, when he was holding his grandson and thinking about his 12 handicap, Johnny realized it just might not happen for him. But you know what did happen for him? He switched to Geico and saved a bunch of money on car insurance. So that was good, and so was hanging out with his grandson.
Your home is important. That's why Geico helps make it easy to save on condo insurance. Because home is more than just a place. Home is where you took minimalism too far because there's only one chair in your entire condo and your only entertainment is one card. Not even a deck of cards, but a single card. And all your guests have to share one plate and one fork, but you're convinced that less stuff means more freedom. The Geico Insurance Agency could help protect the overly minimalist broom closet you call home. Call Geico and see how easy it is to switch and save on condo insurance.